This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
You're being too polite to say it, so I will. The staggering thing about Joan Wyndham is just how frankly she writes about sex. You've got losing her virginity, different positions, her first orgasm described at memorable length, masturbation, fear of an unwanted pregnancy. They're hilarious. It makes hilarious reading, but also remarkably frank reading.
Hello and welcome to this week's pod as Sarah Griswood joins to talk about the secret voices of women's diaries. Her new book, Secret Voices, is a moving and at times shocking collection of diary entries from female authors such as Anne Frank, Virginia Woolf, Emma Thompson and Mary Shelley, plus plenty more. Coming up on the pod, I've got much more great history to come, including James I or James VI of Scotland, Checkpoint Charlie, Patrick Leigh Fermor, and next week my chat is on the Mau Mau uprising in colonial Kenya. If you can give me a rating on your podcast app, I'd greatly appreciate it. Links are in the show notes, and please do share and get in touch. I'm always happy to hear from listeners, but until then, I'll hand you over to me talking with Sarah Griswood on Women's Diaries. Sarah, thanks so much for joining the pod. It's a great pleasure to have you back on.
Delighted to be here.
And we're talking about your new book, your collection of diaries, Secret Voices. And I think it's probably fair to say, if I'm being brutally honest, and I want to talk about honesty because I can't get over some of the honesty in the collection here.
Yeah, I know.
It's amazing. But if I'm brutally honest, this isn't probably female voices. Me being a typical sort of 40-something male have not covered enough female voices. And I'm so glad to be able to talk to you about this now. And there's some incredible women in here that many people would have heard of. But there are also names that I had not actually heard of at all, to my shame. Yeah.
No, indeed. I was very concerned to get both the unexpected lights on the very famous names like Beatrix Potter or Florence Nightingale, or indeed Virginia Woolf. We all knew she was a diarist, but who knew she was a petrol head, fascinated by motor cars, but also the women, as you say, of also some unknown women.
Yes. And because I was talking about this with my mother yesterday, because as you may remember, you very kindly signed this for my mother for Mother's Day. And we couldn't get over the huge number of women in here. And I guess the first question that both my mother and I had was, how on earth, you are a voracious reader of women's diaries and have always wanted to do this. What's the reason?
Well, I do have a background in. I first wrote about women's diaries, if I just say a million years ago, back in my 20s. Believe me, it was a long time ago. And so much has changed since then. So on the one hand, I did have a background. I wasn't doing this, cold from scratch. There's a reason I was invited to do it, and there's a reason I was able to. But back then, it was, yes, there was an age before the internet, and really, all you could access were diaries that were published in your own country or on the shelves of a library near to you. And now so much more has been done. I mean, so much more is available. Also, because a lot of academic work's been done on trying to explore other sorts of voices. The bugbear for the anthologist of diaries is that, of course, ipso facto, it's to some degree a privileged form. You needed to be literate to write one. Ideally, you needed to be upper middle class or connected to someone famous to have it carefully preserved and made available. But there's been a lot of work trying to explore African-American voices, the voices of pioneer women, and looking for women who weren't upper middle class.
Yes, I mean, there are a number of entries here. 19th, 20th century obviously dominates, which I suppose speaks to that. But I mean, there were names in here that were familiar to me. For even sort of from this country, I'm thinking immediately of Una King, who I'd always, you know, had I always thought to me, I had a lot of sympathy for her as a politician.
Yeah.
But reading these diary entries are heartbreaking.
Yes. And she's someone who I'm really impressed that she is so frank. A, because quite honestly, one's got out of the habit of expecting a politician to speak openly and frankly, but also because she obviously knew that the diary was likely to be read, widely read in her own lifetime. And yet she's addressing not just questions of life in the House of Commons, which she does very humorously, but also the difficulties that the job caused in her relationship and her battles with IVF.
But that's what you've selected in the collection, really. And I was wondering about that because I would have thought this is the thing that came out from the collection so strongly is the honesty. I mean, you know, brutal honesty in many cases.
Yes.
Is that, I mean, I almost felt like an interloper reading some of these entries.
Yes, I know what you mean. It's a juggling act. These diaries are out there. You know, I didn't raid anyone's bottom.
I didn't mean to suggest you being creeping.
No, indeed. But the title of the book is Secret Voices. I had some qualms about that because at least some of these diarists did know their words would be out there, and others of them, half, I'd say, wanted it to be. Some of them, like Anne Lister and young Beatrix Potter, even wrote in code. But even the ones who didn't do that, often they were using their diaries, I felt, to explore feelings that were considered transgressive in their own day, for women, that is, anger, ambition, so on. But it's a bit of a toss-up to what degree they were wholly voicing these feelings in a secret, private place, or whether they were stretching out a hand across the void. They couldn't voice these sentiments openly in their own day, but I think some of them wished they could have done. So I think I did have more the sense of freeing up, of liberating voices rather than of forcing them into the open.
And there's got to be a real skill to writing diary entries, hasn't there? I mean, you don't necessarily have to have had an interesting life, do you?
No, indeed. I agree. One of my favourite diarists is the American writer Mae Sarton, who isn't describing in her Journal of a Solitude and so on, isn't describing any dramatic events, but just the beauty of the way that she writes about the spring flowers in the garden or whatever. Others, like Nella Lass, TV's Housewife 49, another, probably my all-time favourite, was a self-identified ordinary woman, though it turned out a very skilled diarist, but living through an extraordinary time, the Second World War. So, yes, some of them are describing extraordinary experiences. Ada Blackjack springs to mind, the sole survivor of a doomed 1920s Arctic expedition. Well, you don't get much more extreme than that, living alone on an Arctic island and learning to shoot seals, except perhaps Anne Morrow Lindbergh, the wife of the famous aviator whose toddler was infamously kidnapped and found dead. It was the crime that inspired Agatha Christie's murder on the Orient Express.
I was reading that entry actually last night, and it's an entry on discovering that her son's body's been found. It's just awful.
I know, it is, isn't it? You do think of all the unimaginable experiences. And when she writes that, I mean, there's an entry I'm quoting from memory, but I can hardly bear to do even that without my voice cracking, about how she's glad that it looks as if he died quickly, as if he wasn't calling out for her.
Mm.
Just, oh my God.
Yeah, it's absolutely devastating. And because with well-known women who are writing in these diaries, you're only really, unless you're a real sort of enthusiast and want to read all their writings, but generally you just see a kind of a public front. And getting to behind and really seeing these thoughts are just with Anne Lindbergh, who later sort of, I guess her husband courted controversy over the isolationist movement in the 1940s, yes, wouldn't attract a huge amount of sympathy. But after reading that, even that one small diary entry,
I know, you feel whatever the isolationist position, to what degree she went along with it, that's not the point here. Those entries just speak straight to the heart.
I mean, honesty's obviously got to be first and foremost, doesn't it, as a diarist?
Yes, okay, let's think about that, because I guess my snap reaction is there's all sorts of honesty. Yes, it does have to be first and foremost, and a number of diarists address that. They kind of edge round to saying something that they feel is controversial or unflattering, but if I'm not to be honest, what is the point of writing here? But then as historians, we do have to be aware, of course, and conscious that a number of these diaries were edited either by the diarists themselves later, or possibly, as in the case of Queen Victoria's, her daughter, Princess Beatrice, transcribed them and omitting some parts and burned the originals. This was after Queen Victoria's death.
But in the case of Queen Victoria, and I'm glad you brought her up, I mean, she has these wonderful conversations with Lord Melbourne, which...
I know.
They are just wonderful. I didn't realize they had such a relationship. I don't, I'm not an... It's one of those things I should have been more aware of. But it's a hilarious chats they seem to have.
Definitely about how unnatural it was for a young woman to have to attend with business, and how they were going to manage to get her mother out of the house. But of course, Queen Victoria, famously, there's the entries like the one after her wedding night, how Albert pulled on my stockings for me and I went in to see him shave, and
which was a real thrill, wasn't it, to watch him shave?
A real thrill for her, yes. And she also, there's another even more memorable one, I think before they were married, about how wonderful Albert looked in skin-tight breeches with nothing underneath. And I actually feel all credit to Princess Beatrice. Possibly she was a historian manque or a writer manque, because she didn't consign those entries to the flames, which you feel she well might have done.
And now I've been desperate to speak to you about one diarist who I just think is just quite wonderful. And I have to again show my ignorance. Joan Wyndham.
Oh, yes, I know.
She's incredible, and she's very young. I did her in her late teens, early 20s, yes, during the Second World War. Indeed. And these diary entries, yes, are just wonderful.
And the irony is, we may all have met her because she wound up working front of house and at the cafe and so on in the Royal Court Theatre. So we may all have been within touching distance of Joan Wyndham without even realising it. But no, you're being too polite to say it, so I will. The staggering thing about Joan Wyndham is just how frankly she writes about sex. You've got losing her virginity, different positions, her first orgasm described at memorable length, masturbation, fear of an unwanted pregnancy. They're hilarious. It makes hilarious reading, but also remarkably frank reading. There's a few entries I'd really hesitate to describe because
oral sex you've not mentioned. She did bring that up.
True, yes. I think for me, I think the one I hesitate to mention is the candles and the self-pleasuring and the how the church will, she's obviously now an outcast where the church is concerned. And you just, yeah, that's frankness.
I guess because I hesitate to bring these things up, I should imagine I'd be a hopeless diarist. I think I would be self-editing before it even got onto the page.
Well, that's a question, of course, whether people do, yeah.
Mm. Do you write a diary?
No, I'm ashamed to say I don't. I have occasionally kept, you know, notes, what you might call an element of journaling, as we say now, but not a record of every day. I kind of feel I should now, except in a way that almost leads us on to another big question for me, though one without an answer, which is where is the diaries going now? Because in terms of my record of what I was doing every day, it's the photographs on my mobile phone. But is that a kind of diary? Even are social media entries a kind of diary? Of course, the clues in the word social, they're meant to be communicating out there, and diaries in their original form are private. But all the same, it is a kind of, if you want to get your daily life down on paper, if you want some reflection of your own identity, well, now what do? You tweet about it, or X about it, I beg its pardon. Instagram or TikTok or...
Well, this is, again, another thing I was talking about with my mother. And I think we took the view that that's rather a sad state of affairs in that, you know, Twitter is this collection of diaries. There's no way you're going to get as much pleasure in browsing through Twitter as you are.
I think that's true. Actually, I do think that's a very good point. No, you're not. I agree.
And we also curate our social media because we want to present an image that we are, you know, a very, very few. I'm sure they're out there and people will say, yes, you should follow this account. He's brutally honest or she's brutally honest about her life. But that's quite unusual. The vast majority are going to be, you know.
Yes, that is true.
It's because it's your brand, isn't it?
Yes, but it brings us back, A, to that question of editing or self-censorship or, you know, decision to put out there with diaries. But also there is the much discussed point that the anonymity or potential anonymity of social media does give you that kind of secrecy factor if you want it. It's now a forum for presenting unpalatable opinions, as in a way the diary once was. But I do totally agree with you. I can't readily imagine a collection of social media entries having the resonance and the colour and the poetry that these do. But maybe, who knows? I mean, the oldest entries here are 400 years old. Maybe in 400 years' time, people will be reading our tweets, posts, and thinking, how wonderful, how cute.
Well, I suppose so, yes. But, you know, it feels there's a discipline to writing diaries, of course, because you have to, I assume they're written the entry for each day is written within a few days.
Well, yeah, that's another question for the editor or the anthologist. At what point does a diary cease to be a diary? Ideally, yes, as you say, they'd be written up on the day and never touched again. But some people, like the diarists crossing the plains, the pioneer women, were keeping a journal, but on purpose to have it record what they knew was an ordinary and extraordinary experience. Some early colonists were writing journal letters to be sent back home. Fanny Burney wrote some definitely diary entries, which I've included, but she also later in life wrote a great many journal letters, which I didn't actually include, A, because the format's not suitable, you know, A, they're long, and because I was doing it day by day. So a journal letter headed June to November really doesn't work for me. I am slightly glad that spared me trying to transcribe one particular entry of Fanny Burney's in a journal letter, which is a several pages description of undergoing a mastectomy without anaesthetic, which when I read that the first time, my chief concern was whether I could get out of the library without throwing up on the floor. But that's not in there because it was a journal letter. But, you know, but that is it. At what point do you decide, no, this isn't a diary, it's a letter? And in the end, it can only be the editor's, the anthologist's own call. I'm sure some people will disagree with the choices I've made there, and maybe rightly.
Well, I'm glad you brought up, you know, illness and cancer treatment, particularly breast cancer. Mm. I mean, Victoria Derbyshire's diaries, which... it's written many, you know, hundreds of years later, is just Victoria Derbyshire. Yes. What she's gone through is extraordinary.
Yes, I know. And she's a lifelong diarist, I gather. In the introduction to her cancer diaries, she wrote about writing a diary as a teenager and how some pages she just wrote down, nothing happened today. And I actually rather wanted to use that as the title for this book, because, of course, the point is that nothing is always something. But yes, absolutely. She is someone who wrote... in what to me absolutely is, it is a diary, it's no question, it's a diary. But she did also have the idea in mind of making her experience public in order to help other women. So to me, the crunch was always that sense of immediacy. And it's got that, but yes, extraordinary.
But was it difficult to decide who to leave out? Or did you have a sort of a certain number of people from, I don't know, the last 25 years? You know, you're going back through various generations and only picking a few diarists from there. Or was it simply quality of diarist?
No, it because of the format of the book going through the year, January 1st, January 2nd, etc. So in each case, I began with the date and made a list, often a far too long a list of what I found as interesting entries on that particular day, and then started editing down so that, just for example, you wouldn't want the same diarist necessarily on June the 2nd, 3rd and 4th, unless it is telling a story. And then if you're in my position, you're left to curse the fact that unaccountably everyone seems to write on, say, August the 12th and absolutely no one on August the 13th. And with this format, there is no cheating. I can't pretend it was a different day.
Oh, dear, dear.
Editing down to try and get a mix. And that's why I say in the introduction that in a way to edit an anthology is to offer an agenda, whether you want to or not. Because in some cases, I was selecting entries so as to tell a story. Like with Anne Morrow Lindberg, I didn't just want to leave it hanging out there. I wanted to follow her occasionally through that summer, from the kidnap of her son to the birth of another child. In other cases, it was thinking, oh, there's far too much from the early 20th century here. Isn't there anyone earlier? You know. And so no, it's a jigsaw puzzle, which is ironic since I've always hated jigsaw puzzles. But this was kind of that, writ large.
Yeah, it's encouraged me to actually read diaries because I'd always thought that a good way, the best not to read too much nonfiction because you become almost, I mean, it depends on the nonfiction, but you become somewhat detached, I think, when you're reading serious history books or, even less serious history books. And without reading novels to really get a little bit more empathy in there, but really, I've been missing diaries the whole time, haven't I?
Yes, I actually think you have. And one thing I found particularly valuable, speaking, from the historical perspective, is to remember the way that things occurred to people at the time and the priority they had or haven't. The entry that always comes to my mind from that is one of Virginia Woolf's in summer, early autumn, summer, I think, of 1918. She says, well, three things happened today. There's talk of peace. Leonard and I made a first visit to the 17 Club, and I broke my tortoiseshell spectacles. She says, well, the first, which is, of course, the most important, but it's fairly obvious it's the tortoiseshell spectacles that are weighing on her mind. And haven't we all been there? But we tend to forget that in a history book, which is naturally focused on the great events of 1918.
Well, the diarist that I first became familiar with, I think, at least that I can remember, apart from, actually, Adrian Mole probably was the first, but that doesn't quite count, does it?
No.
Anne Frank, and
Indeed.
the reason why I mention Anne Frank is that I've discovered another diarist not dissimilar, and that was, and I'm going to ruin the pronunciations, the Vietnamese diarist Dang Thuy
Oh,
Tram.
yes. No, I sympathize, but yes, I know.
And this is a story I didn't really. I was looking,
Right.
looking her up this morning, actually,
Yeah.
just because this is, you've opened a side of the Vietnam War that I thought I knew a little bit about the Vietnam War, but
Yes.
I've been missing this the whole time. This
No.
real mine of diaries.
I agree. That's a was a really surprising voice. I was trying very actively to look for Asian voices, whether Asian American or not, and actually found that a difficulty. I'd be fascinated to know why, if there are historians out there who can tell me. Of course, one problem is that with this format of this book, the diaries had to be coded according to the Western calendar. But yes, I absolutely agree. And again, it's that incredibly human voice from the other side of the conflict, which we just still don't hear.
Yeah, and even more recent voices, Ma Yan, which
Yes.
is so you've done a great job in casting the net far and wide.
Well, I certainly tried. That was one of the challenges, but one I really felt I had to try to rise to. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean she's this extraordinary. She's so young, and I was reading up how the diaries were found. She ran up. Was it her? Did
Her
she run
mother.
up, or her mother
No,
ran up?
her mother, yes. The mother who was the one who'd had to tell her that she could no longer go to school because the money wasn't there, and priority would, of course, be given to schooling her brothers. But nonetheless, clearly her mother, whom Ayana acknowledges, how hard her mother works in the fields to try and provide a better life for her children. Clearly, her mother did have some sense that Mayan too had an identity that should be acknowledged. And it worked, of course. This foreigner took the diaries away, published them, publicized them. Mayan wound up going to the Sorbonne, and
Yeah, it's a lovely tale, a lovely tale. Well, these are fantastic. I know that they were on a list for Mother's Day, and I've given it to my mother for Mother's Day. But I think any listeners who I think it should be all men should read these. I actually think so. Father's Day.
A wonderful thought. And may I point out, of course, American Mother's Day doesn't come until May.
Ah, okay. Well, that's fantastic.
Time,
So,
I
well, plenty of listeners are in America,
Right.
so there you go. They've had their warning. Sarah, this is fantastic. Really, as I say, really love that. I could talk about every diarist. I'm just checking on my notes that there's no one I missed out. There's just some incredible figures in here. There are the big names like Sylvia Plath, of course, and you've mentioned D'Urville Murphy. I'm a huge fan of D'Urville Murphy.
Oh, right. Yes. Yes, definitely. Well, that was a bit of a question. How many entries of travel diaries to put in? And I decided not too many, just as on a very different note, I could have put more entries from Holocaust victims or survivors, whose diaries, of course, were more likely to be preserved because they were unpublished, because they were telling such an extraordinary tale. But up to a point, I did want to give due weight to, quote, ordinary women's ordinary experience.
They don't read as ordinary entries. So
Good.
It's wonderful, Sarah. Thanks so much for your time. This has been great.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
Thanks so much for listening. Plenty more great guests on the way, but in the meantime, thank you and good night.